This is Pat Tomlinson, and I'm talking with Dr. Jim Smart, research and teaching agronomist with Ag Spectrum. Dr. Smart is working from his home office on his farm near La Harpe, Kansas. Jim, thanks for taking the time to talk again today. How are you doing?
Very good. It's cold, but the sun's coming out, so things are looking much better.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving holiday and hopefully recover from your holiday meal?
I was very happy to have all of my kids and their families together, and it worked out very well.
Well, I'm glad to hear you got to enjoy your family get-together. What I actually wanted to discuss with you today are some best practices and maybe some common challenges that associates have in working with maximum farming reports, understanding them better and being more effective in helping growers get the most possible value out of their data. In a recent Red Zone article, Dr. Gardner talked about how yields are presented in the reports and how to interpret the different maps and use them in grower discussions. I wanted to continue on that topic and focus today on helping associates to do the necessary preparation work to evaluate a grower's maximum farming report and be ready to present it and review it with the grower. What are the most common issues or opportunities you've seen that may be challenging for dealers in preparing and reviewing the reports with growers?
Well, sometimes on the reports, we have results in yield that are different than what we expected. And for some people this year, we had yields that were much better than what was expected. So that's wonderful. But there are fields that things didn't do as well as hoped. And oftentimes, it's not a fertility issue. It may be something to do with drainage or weed control, or maybe they had a failure in their insecticide program. Just remember that fertility is a part of that yield, and we can look at P and K numbers and nitrogen numbers, but oftentimes, something that detracted from the yield may be not related to the fertility at all, but some other variable.
Yeah, I think one of the ways I've seen exactly that challenge come up is in looking at the first section, which looks at the whole farm acreage in total and compares the yields within the zones throughout all fields sorted by the various metrics we use, P1, pH, K base saturation, as well as the others. When looking across all fields, other variables are always in play, so it may not always show the relationship between yield results and soil test results in the way that we would expect. If we aren't always keeping that reality in mind, we can go into it with an implicit assumption that optimal ranges will have the highest yield and too high or too low will either be the same or somewhat reduced. We can't forget that these are real farm results and not applied research results. A lot of other very important variables are also changing. Those changing variables are also impacting results. For example, say the high or low P1 zone was mostly in a field that was planted to on a planting date that turned out to be associated with higher yields. Or if those acres were in a field with the best drainage or the best performing hybrid or variety, or the opposite could happen. A chunk of the acres that are in the optimal range for whatever nutrient you're evaluating, that chunk is in a few fields with those same types of factors working against yields. Is this an issue you've seen in your experience?
Oh, yes. Sometimes when we see things that are less than optimal, it may be due to our insect program failed. I saw one field where on one side of the section, they were getting very good corn yields. They had a different variety on the other side of the section, and they had a complete failure in their rootworm control. And the rootworms did a lot of damage to the corn and really hurt the yield. No matter how much fertility you put on that field, if you don't have the roots because they've been damaged by insects to take up that nutrition, you're not going to see the full results of a superior nutritional program. That's one example of why things don't always work out. Conversely, I saw fields where early in the season it was very dry. They didn't really look that good, but they were getting rains every week or two, but certainly drier than normal. And at the end of the season, they had yields that were quite a bit better than expected. In those cases, it may be they had good drainage, they didn't have hardly any diseases at all, and they had adequate rainfall to make a good yield, but no competition from too much moisture causing diseases or insects to flourish. So in those cases, nutrition was important, but just the timing of the rains and the good drainage was what helped them to see the best yields.
Maybe one takeaway here, relating this back to our focus of helping associates prepare to review a maximum farming report with the grower, maybe one takeaway is that a best practice could be looking through the yield analysis, particularly on the whole farm results. And when you see something that is likely to cause a question or that seems counter to the basic science, take a look at the individual fields that contribute to the results in each category. Try to understand what other variables were likely involved on any significant portion of those acres in a specific category listed that could have been important in determining yield results. In a lot of cases, I think it may be obvious which other factors were likely to be the driving force when you take the time to look at individual fields.
That's correct. And this year, there were some farmers that their hillsides actually yielded better than the bottom land, which is the opposite of normal. And what was going on? Well, drainage is certainly a good portion of that, and lack of disease when the soils are relatively dry, but yet they received enough moisture to make a good yield, but they just stayed dry. So insects and disease did not flourish in those fields on the upper ground, so they yielded the best, where the bottom ground that typically yields the best perhaps was more waterlogged or had more disease because of the environment there with more moisture. So lots of times there's things that maybe we don't really expect on yields, and it can't be explained by just better nutrition, because it's the nutrition is the same. It's other factors. And we need to investigate what could those factors be. Is it insects? Is it weeds? Is it herbicide carryover because the pH is different in those areas? Is it planting date or variety? All of those come into play on yield. It's not just nutrition. Nutrition is very important, and timing of nutrition, but other factors come into play also.
I can't help but think about the power of a systems approach in crop production, which we talk about a lot. And I think this is a case where you can see the power of a systems approach in customer service. Many of the things that you mentioned, weed control, weather differences, disease pressure, would only be likely to be known from the service checks we do and the notes we take of what we see or the discussions that we have with the grower during the service check contacts that let us hear his observations during the growing season. And he may not always remember those observations as important when he's looking at yield results in the fall. The service checks with customers are always valuable just on their own merit, but the value can be increased even more when what we learn on the service check fits into what we see on the maximum farming report, and together they can help identify actionable issues that are likely to improve next year's results in a way that probably wouldn't happen if we weren't diligent about following our service check schedule.
That's correct. And sometimes we just have to ask the producer, what happened on this portion of land that's different than the others? You know, is there some event that occurred here that I'm missing? And sometimes maybe a early season hail caused some damage and the producer's kind of forgotten about that at harvest time. Or maybe It was some herbicide drift that came in and he thought the crop pretty much recovered from it. But when it came down to yield, it did not recover. It's easy to forget things that happened 60 or 90 days ago when the plants look like they recovered, but in fact, the yield showed that we did not have a full recovery.
I also wanted to touch on the topic of how much we should be focusing on the whole farm result, which begins the report and seems to naturally attract our attention, and how much we should be focusing on the individual field results. On one hand, the whole farm summary seems like it should have more validity because it deals with so many more acres than an individual field. But the downside is the huge amount of variability on the other factors, weather, hybrid, previous crop, that comes along with all those acres. The individual fields are obviously a smaller sample size, so to speak, but the individual field analysis will almost certainly reduce or maybe even eliminate the changes in the other variables that can distort results. Do you have any thoughts on how you balance out those two approaches?
Well, I really like to look at individual tracts or farm fields, because if there is a problem in that field, it may not be all throughout the farm, but why is that farm yielding less than the others? And to dive into the problems that could have occurred on that farm and try to determine it, because I think one of the reasons maximum farming has been so successful for many producers is that we bring up the low in yields, and so the whole farm averages inches go up when you take out those low yielding areas, because you deal with the drainage or the pH, or maybe it's an herbicide problem or weed control, and you deal with those, and then your whole farm averages go up substantially. And producers are very happy, you know, when they look at the year end and say, oh, our farm yields are better, but why are they better? Well, oftentimes it is nutrition, but it's the timing and then dealing with those problem areas to make them average or better.
Maybe another best practice could be looking back into previous year's maximum farming reports and seeing if the individual fields that have been the most challenging are showing improvement in the tougher areas of the field relative to the spots that tend to shine each year. In addition, they might show that the field zones that were high and low yielding were different in the past than in the current year. That could suggest the factors driving this year's results were likely to be something related to this year's specific environment or management. Another approach might be looking at the difference between the poorest field's results and his farm average for the same crop, or taking a look at the difference between the results on a field he thinks of as his most challenging and comparing it to a typically higher yielding field nearby. See if the difference between the two fields is being reduced over time. The results from previous year's maximum farming reports are shown on each field, so comparing yield differences of two fields should be easy to do with just a current report.
Yes, and one example, I was on a farm fairly recently, and the producer had 240 acres in that tract, and he said the east side always is the very best yielding, the center 80 is okay, and the west side is always the lowest yielding in this field, and we can put the same nutrition on, or we can add more nutrition, and it just doesn't yield as well. Going back to his soil samples, instead of focusing on P and K, which were good or high on all of the ground, immediately I looked at the pH, and as the pH changed, our yields dropped. And when his pHs were 5.8 and 5.9, that was the lowest yields, and as the pH increased, the yields increased up to 6.8. His challenge was not enough fertilizer or not the right herbicides or variety. The challenge there was adjusting the pH of the soil so the plants could take up those nutrients adequately. So by just adjusting the pH, that was the simplest and easiest way to solve his issue with that field. Truly, you could add all the fertilizer you wanted to, but if you have pH issues that are restricting the crop's ability to take up those nutrients, you're not going to see the full effect of that nutritional program.
Is pH something that tends to get overlooked in the analysis of the maximum farming reports? Certainly, we look at the lime recs that come out of the soil test, but when we look at the yield reports, do we still tend to pay more attention to the P and K levels, expecting to see answers to yield variability there, when pH or maybe other soil metrics can be a more important factor in many soils with respect to driving yields?
That's certainly the case. Many times, producers and even our associates immediately look at the soil samples and look at the P and K levels, where I think the most important things to focus on are the pH, the organic matter, the cation exchange capacity, and what's going on there, because all of those can inhibit the plant's ability to take up the nutrients. So if our pHs are out of whack, or if we have one area of the field that's very low organic matter, then maybe that's the issue rather than overall nutrition that's there, but maybe the plants are having a difficult time taking them up. If our CECs change from a clay to a sand, maybe those sands just aren't holding water like the clays, and that's the yield limiting factor rather than nutrition. So focusing on our program to get the nutrition out early and get a good root system, a deep root system, is maybe the most important thing we can do for that producer, rather than looking at just P and K overall.
If we can try to pluck another best practice out of this discussion, maybe it could be taking the time to look through the individual field results and reviewing the maps that may not always get the attention of the grower when he looks at the results. pH, CEC, organic matter. Be aware of the individual fields that can help make the points you want to make and the maps that you think can help explain the results the best, especially if they're ones that might be easy for the grower to overlook.
Yes, pHs are so important for our soils to release nutrients for the plants. And we know that Grozyme works best in pHs from 6.4 to 7.2. So if we optimize Grozyme's ability to stimulate microbial populations and then release nutrients from the minerals in the soil, that would be in that more neutral pHs. And as we get into acidic or sour soils, Grozyme is less effective. So we're not getting the benefits or the full benefits of the Grozyme. And conversely, when we get into alkaline soils, oftentimes it's very difficult for some of the nutrients to be taken up. If we can do more to try to neutralize the soil pH, frequently we greatly enhance the producer's ability to make a good yield. Sometimes when they're focusing on just P and K, oftentimes I've seen where the phosphorus levels, the highest, are the lowest yielding in the field. So it wasn't phosphorus at all that was driving the yields. It's other factors. What are those factors? Frequently, if we can look at the pH and organic matter and cation exchange, that will give us clues as to why we're underperforming in certain areas of the farm compared to others.
Jim, I think you've given us some good ideas for evaluating the maximum farming reports and preparing to review them with growers. Just one thing I'd point out before we wrap up the topic is about the importance of actually collecting the data and requesting the report. I think in some cases, dealers may know the customer well and have a great relationship and are confident that the customer knows the system is working and plans to continue with us. But one thing we have to recognize is that there are sometimes people behind the grower that are part of his operation and that can have influence. Maybe a brother, a banker, a landowner, or a farm manager. We want to give the grower the tools and confidence to talk about the system and bring along others in his operations by showing his results. A maximum farming report is a great way to do that. Before we wrap up completely, are there any questions or topics that you've been hearing from dealers recently that might be a benefit for others to hear about?
Well, one that bothered me recently is consultants that were on the farm and had been for a year, and the consultant decided that this farm, the reason their yields weren't better is they needed more magnesium. So he was recommending Sulfamag and dolomitic lime and three different forms of magnesium to enhance the magnesium levels on this farm that had quite a lot of clay already. And I thought, my goodness, this is like the worst thing you could possibly do. But sometimes growers get inputs from others that maybe aren't based upon sound science or fact. We need to probably inquire, why would you think that's the case? And my response to this particular consultant, I said, well, tell me what magnesium deficiency looks like in corn or soybeans. And he could not tell me. And I said, well, I've really never seen that. It's not showing up in the leaves or stunting the crop. Are you sure it's not something else here other than magnesium? In other words, we're following the wrong path sometimes from consultant that maybe isn't as well informed as he could be.
I think a lesson there might be the importance of asking questions when we're challenged and not just launching into a contrarian view when we're confronted with bad advice a customer gets from another source. We know we can't stop them from hearing opinions from others that may mislead them, but we can be most effective by asking the questions about justifying the recommendation we disagree with and talking basic science and trying to avoid an argument that just forces the grower to choose who to believe.
Yes. And if we have areas on a farm that specifically are lower yielding, you know, maybe we need to investigate. Is it got a nematode problem because he has not rotated his crops for many years there? Is it an insect problem? Is it herbicide carryover that's building up over years because he's not practicing good rotational practices? So some of those things we need to delve into and ask questions. What herbicides, what crop rotations have been used in the past? And if he's been continuous corn or continuous soybeans for many years, there's a good chance he's got a buildup of some disease or insects that are limiting the ability to yield as well as it could.
Well, Jim, as always, you've been generous with your time and with a lot of good information and experience that I think can be helpful to our associates. Thanks again, and I hope you have a great day.
Okay. Have a great day, Pat.